This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, my name is Haru. I will be reading the business section of the Cincinnati Enquirer for Sunday, May 12, 2024. I will read the following business articles, time permitting. First article, what to keep in mind about a phased retirement? That's from Allworth Advice's Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Second article, Americans are reluctantly spending $500 a year tipping, a new study says. That's by Betty Lynn Fisher of USA Today. Third article, a new Lexus dealership offers unusual perks. Stunning rooftop views while you wait. That's by Alexander Coolidge of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Fourth article, will Biden or Trump be better for the economy? That's from Allworth Advice's Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi. Fifth article, Northern Kentucky Cavalcade of Homes features 10 new homes priced from $300,000 to over $1 million. And that's by Randy Tucker of the Cincinnati Enquirer. And I'll begin with today's cover story titled, LeBron James approved Blaze Pizza to open 5 more restaurants in Greater Cincinnati. And that's by B.B. Hodges of the Cincinnati Enquirer. You'll soon get more opportunities to eat like the king. Blaze Pizza penned a deal to open 5 more locations in Greater Cincinnati, the company announced in a press release. Basketball star LeBron James is a well-known co-owner and investor in the Fast Fired Pizza franchise. A 2022 Mashed article reports James's equity stake in the Pasadena-based company is roughly $40 million as of 2020. He also owns 19 franchise locations. Blaze Pizza offers customers make-your-own oven-fired pizzas that are ready in minutes. There are currently 2 locations in Greater Cincinnati, one in Mason, the other at Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport, commonly known as CVG. The 5 new pizzerias will open in Blue Ash, Kenwood, Westchester, Liberty Township, Oakley, University of Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, and the Miamisburg-Dayton area, owner Sanjay Patel told the Enquirer. The 45-year-old entrepreneur, who already owns the locations in Mason, plans to open one pizzeria each year for the next 5 years. Patel purchased the Mason pizzeria from the previous owner in February and completely renovated it, he said. This location played a large role in why he decided to become a franchise owner of the pizza company. When we visited the restaurant with his family in 2015, he thought to himself, wow, can I ever dream of something like this? Will I ever have something like this? 9 years later, his dream came true. Something about Blaze is very special, Patel said. He elaborated by saying there are 4 doughs and over 40 toppings to choose from. People who make a pizza here will never get this pizza anywhere else because every pizza is unique. Blaze gives you choice, Patel said, and choice is something people really enjoy. They have freedom. Our next article is titled, What to Keep in Mind About a Phased Retirement. That's from Allworth Advice's Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Every week, Allworth Financial's Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi, CFP, answer your questions. If you, a friend, or someone in your family has a money issue or problem, feel free to send those questions to yourmoney@enquirer.com. Now, our first question comes from Alexandria. The person's name is Paul. What are your thoughts about easing into retirement? I think it sounds preferable to quitting work cold turkey, but I'm not sure the best way to go about it. Answer, a phased retirement, which simply means gradually reducing your work hours, can be a great way to carefully transition from work into the new chapter of your life. But there are definitely some things you'll want to think about and research before going this route. Assuming you work for an employer, one of the biggest questions you need to address is, will your company even allow it? Because according to the Society of Human Resource Management, it's not very common. As of 2019, only about 6% of employers offer a formal phased retirement program. So check with your HR department. If it's not offered, you'll likely have to take matters into your own hands and talk to your boss, SHRM, says informal or ad hoc programs are a little more common. Be specific about what you're thinking. How many days will you work? What do you envision your role to look like? What pay are you expecting? And be sure to illustrate why it's worthwhile and valuable for the company to keep you on as part of the team. Also, can you stay on the company healthcare plan during this transition? The number of hours you work may determine this, and once you reach age 65, your Medicare coverage depends on the size of your company. If it employs less than 20 people, you generally have to sign up for Medicare. If the company is bigger, then you can choose to stay on your company plan and delay Medicare. Of course, what does your financial situation look like? Fewer hours means a smaller paycheck. This could have a potential impact on your current lifestyle and create less of an opportunity to save for your full-time retirement. On the other hand, a paycheck is still the paycheck, and this income stream could allow you to leave your retirement savings untouched for a little while longer. Social Security is a consideration as well. If you're younger than your full retirement age and simultaneously claiming your benefit while working, your benefit could be reduced. Here's the Allworth advice. There are a lot of moving parts to implementing a phased retirement. Be sure to think through all the ramifications before following through and meet with a fiduciary financial advisor if you have questions or concerns. Our next question comes from Shane from Newport. I'm 29 and starting a new job soon. What should I do with my old 401k? It only has about $20,000 in it. Answer: there's no only about it. $20,000 is a lot of money, and if you make the right moves, it can continue to grow, which is why you don't ever recommend cashing out an old 401k. You'll get hit with taxes and early withdrawal penalties. Plus, you would be losing out on all the potential growth and future compounding. This leaves three other options. First, you could potentially keep your 401k with your former employer while you're getting adjusted to your new job. It would be one less thing to worry about. Second, assuming your new employer offers a 401k plan, you could transfer the money to the new plan. A third, you could roll the money into an individual retirement account, IRA, that you open on your own at a brokerage firm. No matter which route you choose, just be sure you're comparing your investment options and fees. The Allworth advice is that there's no absolute rule for what to do with your old 401k, but there is an absolute rule for what you shouldn't do. Don't cash out. Always keep that money earmarked for retirement. Our responses are for informational purposes only, and individuals should consider whether any general recommendation in these responses are suitable for their particular circumstances based on investment objectives, financial situation, and needs. To the extent that a reader has any questions regarding the applicability of any specific issue discussed above to his or her individual situation, he or she is encouraged to consult with the professional advisor of his or her choosing, including a tax advisor and or attorney. Retirement planning services offered through Allworth Financial, a SEC registered investment advisor. Securities offered through AW Securities, a registered broker-dealer, member of FINRA/SIPC. You can visit them at their website, and that is allworthfinancial.com, or you can contact them by phone, and that number is 513-469-7500. That's 513-469-7500. Our next article is titled, Americans are reluctantly spending $500 a year tipping, a new study says. And that's by Betty Lynn Fisher of USA Today. Do you feel a ping of awkwardness or pressure when you see a tip request pop up on a screen at the end of a transaction? In other words, are you guilt tipping? You're not alone. Americans spend nearly $500 a year tipping more than they'd like to, according to a new study. Talker Research, a research and polling agency, recently surveyed 2,000 Americans asking how much tipflation may be impacting people's wallets. The poll found the average respondent reluctantly tipped $37.80 a month due to the pressure of tipping options presented to them. That figure equates to $459.60 a year in guilt-induced gratuity, with over a quarter, 26%, feeling they are always or often forced to tip more than they'd like to, Talker Research said in a post about its findings. We know that tipping has been a hot topic. Van Darden, head of media relations for Talker Research, told USA Today, it's trended on TikTok. There's all kinds of online conversation about it. It's been in the news as people transition out of the high peaks of COVID and delivery services. Darden said, Talker Research noticed that a lot of businesses have kept the automatic gratuity that was popular during the pandemic. Talker Research wanted to get reactions from consumers on their feelings about tipping, including how people of different generations feel, he said. Do we really need to tip? According to the survey, the average respondent tipped more than they'd like on six occasions within the last 30 days. Whether it's the watchful eye of a barrister, the hastily swiveled tablet, or the waiter handing you the card machine, more than half, 56% of respondents note that pressure to tip higher is a regular occurrence. Talker Research said in its post about the survey, only 24% said it was a rare experience for them to feel put on the spot when tipping. Here are some other results from the survey. 49% of respondents said they'd noticed their options for tipping on tablets and digital devices increased in value in the last month alone. Nearly a third, 31%, answered that they had been asked to tip for a service they wouldn't normally consider tipping. Men feel pressured to tip higher more often than women, 28% to 25%. Do people of different generations feel differently about tipping? There are generational differences in how people feel about tipping. Gen Z, 16%, and Millennials, 16%, were almost twice as likely to say they always feel pressure to tip than older generations, the study said. Just 9% of Gen X and only 5% of Boomers felt the same constant tipping obligation. When tipping in store, a third of Gen Z, 33%, and Millennials, 33%, always or often feel pressured or were made to feel guilty when tipping. That compares to 23% for Gen X and 13% for Boomers. Should you tip a machine? The pressure to tip also doesn't require service from a human. 23% of all those surveyed said they would likely leave a tip for service that required no human interaction, such as a vending machine or a self-checkout kiosk at the grocery store, Talker Research reported. Now, that article was written by Betty Lynn Fisher. Betty Lynn Fisher is a consumer reporter for USA Today. She can be reached at blynnfisher@usatoday.com or follow her on X, Facebook, or Instagram at blynnfisher. That's at blynnfisher. Sign up for our free The Daily Money newsletter, which will include consumer news on Fridays here. Continuing with the tipping issue is an article by Madora Lee of USA Today titled, "Are We at a Tipping Point? You're Not Imagining It. How and Why Businesses Get You to Tip More." When Daryl Tom ate at a brewery in suburban Chicago recently, he bought a couple of expensive bottles of barrel-aged beer, a sandwich to go, plus a beer while he waited. The bill came to $80, and the lowest suggested tip displayed on the restaurant's iPad was 20%, or $16. The request felt egregious on multiple levels, said Tom, an attorney who knows his tipping etiquette. Not only was there little or no service, but the amount was calculated on the after-tax total. Conventional etiquette doesn't require a tip for takeout. But if the order is large, complicated, or brought to you curbside by staff, there's a 10% gratuity, then a 10% gratuity is fine, experts say. And tipping is always calculated on the pre-tax amount, generally 15% to 20% for sit-down meals. Tipping requests have exploded in the past couple of years. Everywhere you go, a jar, a receipt, or a checkout screen displays a suggested amount pressuring you to tip. Businesses often automatically ask for tips, even if they're not warranted, and include a helpful guide for different percentages to make the math easier. But buyer beware. Those prompts could lead to over-tipping, experts say. How are businesses raking in more tips? DoorDash warns customers now that if they don't include an upfront tip for their delivery drivers, they should expect longer waits for their orders. That change caused a ruckus on social media, with some customers asking why they should tip before knowing if they'll get good service or if they should even be the ones bearing the brunt of paying wages for DoorDash. Our next article is titled, "A New Lexus Dealership Offers Unusual Perk, Stunning Rooftop Views While You Wait." And this is by Alexander Coolidge of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Speedy maintenance service with a view? Performance Lexus of Northern Kentucky opened its new Fort Wright auto dealership just off the Cowles Lane exit from I-75/70-175. With an extra amenity, it hopes cultivates loyal customers. A rooftop patio with what a release called stunning views on the rolling Kentucky hills around it. Aimed at customers waiting for repairs and other service, the dealership says guests can head upstairs for refreshments, no alcohol, fresh fruit, snacks, coffee, tea, and water. From a lounge off the patio that will be open three seasons a year. The new 52,000 square foot lot opened last week with several features the dealership hopes represents a new level of service for customers. A business center with private workspaces, Wi-Fi and USB access, a children's play area, and a nursing suite for new moms. Other amenities include electric vehicle charging stations and on-site technology specialists to help drivers with Lexus information systems. To avoid extra waiting for repairs, the dealership has 30 service bays for servicing cars, by employees with an average of 10 years with the company. Our customers are passionate about their vehicles, but they also lead busy lives, and we need to welcome them in the context of their other obligations. Shane Deaver, Vice President of the Performance Automotive Network, said in a statement, "The local car lot is hardly the first luxury auto dealer to ratchet up extra service and amenities, according to car shopping website Edmunds. An ultra-competitive automotive landscape has pushed some dealerships to pour on the service and ambiance. One Mercedes-Benz dealer in Newport Beach, California, offers complimentary airport shuttle pickup and drop-off, even if you aren't servicing your car. A Lincoln Land Rover and Jaguar dealer in Merritt Island, Florida, offers car-owning customers club access that includes a fitness center, a barber shop, a video arcade for kids, and gas sold at cost," Edmunds reports. An Aston Martin dealer in Los Angeles offers customers a James Bond-themed environment, including theme music and martinis. Family-owned Performance Automotive Network is one of the largest 40 automotive dealers in the country. It has 8 dealerships in the greater Cincinnati area and franchise areas in Centerville, Dayton, Columbus, Marysville, Lancaster, and Delaware, and in Utah in the greater Salt Lake City area. The new lot sells new and pre-owned Lexus SUVs, sedans, hybrid, electric, and performance vehicles, as well as more than 200 used vehicles of all makes and models. The service department will specialize in Lexus models, but does maintenance and repairs on other vehicles. The new lot replaces its location at 633 West 3rd Street in Covington, which is converting to a performance used car superstore. Our next article is titled, "Will Biden or Trump Be Better for the Economy?" And that's from Allworth Advice's Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi. Every week, Allworth Financial's Amy Wagner and Steve Harubi, CFP, answer your questions. If you, a friend, or someone in your family has a money issue or problem, feel free to send those questions to yourmoney@inquirer.com. Our first question comes from Gordon in Highland Heights. Who will be better for the economy, Trump or Biden? Answer. This is a question that will no doubt keep coming up between now and November. But in this hyper-partisan era we all now live in, it's important to take a step back and look at things through the lenses of data, not through the lenses of politics. There are two big factors that affect the economy. The first and most significant is consumer spending. That is, how much cash you, your friends, your family, and your neighbors are infusing into the economy. This makes up 70% of the country's economic output, what's called gross domestic product, or GDP. This then is driven by bank lending standards, inflation, interest rates, the job market, and corporate profits, among other things. The next biggest factor is government spending, 17%. And yes, this is where the hot button issue of deficit spending and the debt level come into play. But here's the thing. While both parties have acknowledged the importance of managing the country's debt, the total amount of debt has regularly increased regardless of who's in the White House. Similarly, our data at Allworth shows that the economy has expanded every four-year period going back to the 1949 inauguration date. This is key. What this tells us is that over the past 50 years, the economy has grown regardless of who is in the White House. Here's the Allworth advice. We know that emotions will be running high this year as election season starts to ramp up. But you need to keep your political affiliation at the door when it comes to your retirement plan and investments, because while there may be market turbulence in the short term, depending on the outcome, keep in mind there are market ups and downs in non-election years as well. And even more importantly, the data shows that over the long run, stocks on the whole and the economy are relatively indifferent to the president's party. Our next question is from Caroline in Cincinnati. Caroline asks, is pet insurance worth it? Answer, we all love our furry friends, but wow, they can be expensive. In fact, a recent Forbes analysis found that essential dog expenses for things like vet care, grooming, toys, boarding, etc., can cost more than $1,500 annually. Cats are a little less expensive. And if you take Fido to doggy daycare twice a week, you're likely going to spend almost an additional $3,000 per year on average. And of course, unexpected bills can pop up too, like an emergency trip to the vet. If you don't have room in your budget to deal with these kinds of expenses, pet insurance could be worth it. The average monthly premium is about $50 a month for dogs and $30 for cats, according to the North American Pet Health Insurance Association. But if that's too steep, you could consider getting an accident-only plan that should cut the monthly premium in about half. You could also raise your deductible, and enrolling your pet when they're younger will also help cut down on the cost. The Allworth advice is that buying pet insurance can be a smart move depending on your financial situation and your pet's overall age and health. Just don't forget to shop around. Kiplinger's recommends using a site like Policy Advisor, that's Pawlicy Advisor, or PetInsuranceQuotes.com to compare policies. Responses are for informational purposes only, and individuals should consider whether any general recommendation in these responses are suitable for their particular circumstances based on investment objectives, financial situation, and needs. To the extent that a reader has any questions regarding the applicability of any specific issue discussed above to his or her individual situation, he or she is encouraged to consult with the professional advisor of his or her choosing, including a tax advisor and/or attorney. Retirement planning services offered through Allworth Financial, a SEC registered investment advisor. Securities offered through AW Securities, a registered broker/dealer, member of FINRA/SIPC. You can visit them at their website, and that is allworthfinancial.com, or you can contact them by telephone, and that number is 513-469-7500. I repeat, 513-469-7500. Our next article is titled, Northern Kentucky Cavalcade of Homes Features 10 New Homes Priced from $300,000 to $1 million. This article was written by Randy Tucker of the Cincinnati Enquirer. This year's Cavalcade of Homes show started Saturday, featuring 10 new townhomes and single-family homes at locations throughout Northern Kentucky, with prices ranging from $300,000 to $1 million. The Building Industry Association of Northern Kentucky is producing the show, which will take place from noon to 5 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays for the first three weekends in May. The inventory of new homes across the nation is tight, and the ability to see 10 homes spread across our region is a unique and rare opportunity given today's home supply challenges, said Brian Miller, Executive Vice President of the Trade Association. The total number of homes for sale in the Cincinnati metro area was 3,762 in March, up more than 60% from the same month last year, according to Redfin, a national real estate brokerage and housing market tracker. But the most recent figure still represents less than 2 month supply of housing, the Inquirer recently reported. A healthy housing market typically has at least a 5 or 6 month supply of housing. Cavalcade, which is free and open to the public, will feature homes from Arlinghouse Builders, Ashley Builders Group, The Bold Company, Dries Homes, Ashford Homes, and the Meyer Johan Building Group. Two of the homes are located in the Martins Gate subdivision in Newport, which was the site of the 2023 Homerama Showcase of Luxury Homes. And that concludes the reading of the business section of the Cincinnati Inquirer for Sunday, May 12th, 2024. My name is Haru. This is Radio Reading Services. Until next time, be safe, stay positive, and continue taking care of yourselves and each other. Now, stay tuned for the opinions and editorials.
Hello, everyone. This is Dave, and I want to start out by wishing all the mothers out there a very happy Mother's Day. May you have the best of days. I'll be reading out of the forum section of the Cincinnati Inquirer, the opinion editorials I'll be reading today, time permitting. There will be two editorials under the banner of Voters Are Divided. First, Trump or Biden, true threat to democracy. This is written by guest columnists Christine Matthews and Celinda Lake. And secondly, Trump and Biden catering to extremists. This is written by guest columnist Nicole Russell. Then, revamped Sunday Inquirer taps into the power of print. This comes to us from the Inquirer editor, Burl Love. I celebrate my mother by telling your stories. This editorial was written by Bonnie Jean Feldkamp. And how to guard against cancer when you're under 50. This is written by guest columnist Ann Saker. The first two editorials this morning are under the banner of Voters Are Divided. First up, Trump or Biden, true threat to democracy. This is written by Christine Matthews and Celinda Lake, both guest columnists. The stakes for the 2024 election cannot be higher, according to both major candidates for president. President Joe Biden has said that nothing short of American democracy is on the line and declared his opponent, quote, willing to sacrifice democracy to put himself in power. Former President Donald Trump, in turn, has said that, quote, if we don't win this election, I don't think you're going to have another election in this country. He also said that it is Biden who threatens democracy by weaponizing government against him. A poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research found that 62% of adults say democracy in the United States could be at risk depending upon who wins the election next fall. But like the candidates for president, they are divided on who represents the bigger threat. And with issues like immigration, abortion, and inflation competing for attention, how much will the larger issue of democracy factor into decision-making? The short answer is, it depends on how you ask and whom you ask. The latest NBC News survey illustrates this point. On the question of what is, quote, the most important issue facing the country, inflation and immigration rank ahead of threats to democracy. But when it's framed as an issue so important that you'd vote for or against a candidate solely on that basis, protecting democracy ranks first, followed by immigration and abortion. Concerns about democracy's future helped Democrats in 2022. The saliency of democracy to vote choice was seen in 2022 in the 2022 elections, and was particularly important for Democrats as it is in 2024. In 2022, prominent election deniers lost races for U.S. Senate, governor, and for the office that oversees state elections, Secretary of State. Yet more than 60% of Republicans say Biden was not the legitimate winner of the 2020 presidential election, a belief based on false statements made by Trump. To really believe that, though, is to feel that the republic is in which we live is not truly democratic. In fact, Republicans are more likely than Democrats to say the state of democracy is not working well. And yet, it is Democrats and Biden voters who, in poll after poll, say that, quote, threats to democracy is a top voting issue for them. Consider the latest national survey from Emerson College. Biden voters rank, quote, threats to democracy, 19%, second only to the economy, 27%, as the most important issue facing the United States. Trump voters, on the other hand, are significantly more likely to prioritize the economy at 39% and immigration, 37%, over, quote, threats to democracy, which is at 4%. Voters who are undecided overwhelmingly say the economy at 50% is the top issue. Older voters more concerned about threats to democracy. Voters 60 and older in this poll and others are significantly more likely than younger voters to say a threat to democracy is a top issue facing the country, and this may be one of the reasons that Biden is performing well or better than expected with this poll, with this group in polls. It's no surprise to hear both parties talking about freedom. In fact, that is the top association voters across the spectrum have when they think of the word democracy, according to research by Navigator. And the truth about freedom is that it can mean many things, and in fact does mean different things to Democrats than Republicans in this context. For a Democratic voter, freedom may mean the right to make decisions about abortion without government interference, voting rights, or the ability to protest. For a Republican voter, freedom may mean the right to bear arms, to speak without being canceled or censored, or the ability of the free market to operate without excessive government interference. So on one level, the preservation of democracy in our country is a big issue that may seem less important to people's lives than, say, the price of groceries. But it also can mean for many voters the preservation of the things they value about living in our country, some of which may be personal and consequential when they decide how they will vote in 2024. This article was written by a couple of guest columnists. Celinda Lake, who's president of Lake Research Partners, was one of two lead pollsters for Joe Biden's 2020 presidential campaign. She also is a pollster for the Democratic National Committee. Christine Matthews is president of Bellwether Research and is a leading public opinion pollster known for her understanding of swing voters, particularly women. The second editorial under the banner Voters Are Divided is entitled Trump and Biden Catering to Extremists. This editorial was written by guest columnist Nicole Russell. A glance of news coverage or social media, pretty much at any time shows that there are extremists in politics on both sides of the aisle. It's disconcerting at best and terrifying at worst. The sad truth is that those extreme edges of the parties have become necessary to win the White House. Former President Donald Trump and President Joe Biden need those factions to win in November. What does this say about where we are in American politics and the future of the parties? Is this what the American experiment has come to, and is there a hope that things can change for the better? Let's start with the Democrats. It has been disappointing to watch far-left progressives harbor anti-Semitic and anti-American sentiments in protests and encampments on university campuses across the country. Progressives have moved so far to the left in ideology, whether it's approving transgender care for minors, raising the minimum wage to astronomical heights, or defending hate speech, that average liberals can start to seem like moderates. Extremism is also happening in the Republican Party. As a conservative, it has been maddening to see just how much the MAGA faction of the party, which at first just seemed small, zealous, and overly consumed with the populist Trump, has taken over the message. Despite plenty of better options, the GOP has again gathered around Trump despite indictments, a hush money trial, election denials, and the events of January the 6th, 2021. Biden needs extreme progressives. Generation Z, spanning 1997 to 2012, makes up a small but perhaps vital share of voters, and its members are by far the most progressive. They embrace Marxism, LGBTQ plus rights, and abortion rights while also showing a willingness to vote. Data shows that more than 28% of voters ages 18 to 24 voted in the 2022 midterm elections, and that Gen Z is much more progressive than their parents or grandparents. Pew Research Center found that 70% of the Gen Z think that the government should work harder to solve people's problems, the highest rate of all the age groups. While Biden has not catered to Gen Zers as much as they'd like him to, he did give them a peace offering in the form of student loan forgiveness months before the next election. Biden needs his fringe far left faction, even if he has not fully embraced them. So the president needs the group of young voters who think that despite a whopping deficit, the government is not big enough yet, socialism is cool, America is not that great, anti-Semitism and anti-American protests from encampments at Ivy League universities are a rite of passage. Trump and Republicans need MAGA. On the other hand, Republicans have embraced Trump and his MAGA movement as the best representation of their party. Polls show that almost three-quarters of Republicans would be satisfied with Trump as the GOP presidential nominee again. He has bested every Republican candidate in polls without showing up to debates. MAGA has taken over the Republican National Committee and the Speaker of the House. Conservatives need MAGA to help take back the White House. So Trump needs that segment of voters who think that January the 6th, 2021 was not an insurrection, just a riot, and that the election was rigged. He needs voters who believe he is innocent and practically a demagogue. What does this mean about where we are in American politics? There is some hope that America will find a political center. According to a study on polarization from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, American voters are less ideologically polarized than they think they are, and that misconception is the greatest for the most politically engaged people. This study goes on to say that people who are most involved in civics hold the least accurate views on the other side's beliefs and tend to become the most polarized. With social media algorithms working overtime, one could see how a Fox News junkie continually hears versions of the story of the 2020 election being rigged, and a 22-year-old TikTok junkie only hears versions of the idea that emphasizes that Osama bin Laden's hatred of Western values. One can see the fuel fanning the flames on the extreme sides of the aisle. I hope that fringe extremists ultimately do not represent either party and that America is less polarized than it feels. But if this is true, why is the GOP embracing it? Why is Biden even catering to Gen Z at all? While political and civic involvement is vital to a healthy democracy, the growing existence of fringe extremists on both sides has turned, quote, average Americans off. Most Americans don't think about politics much, and their views shift with time, the news, and perspective. Americans likely agree with each other on some core concerns, even if they differ on how to handle them. This could be depressing for hardcore politicos, but it's a relief for keen observers who think the Democratic Party is going to turn into a raging horde of anti-Semites, and the Republican Party is going to become one of the narcissistic loon shouting MAGA from the White House balcony. We're here with Trump and Biden catering to the extreme right and the left because of social media, false perceptions, and ignorance. But to fringe right or left does not have to define American politics. Americans must continue to condemn extremists and find common ground. This editorial was written by Nicole Russell. She is an opinion columnist with USA Today, and she lives in Texas with her four kids. Today's third editorial was written by Burl Love, who's the Inquirer editor. His editorial is entitled Revamped Sunday Inquirer Taps into the Power of Print. As long as I've been an editor, we've been navigating the uncharted waters of the digital revolution. In the early days of the internet, life was much simpler. When the next day's print edition was safely put to bed and rolling off the presses, a lone, quote, online editor would post the stories on our website and call it good. We treated our website like the print edition, updating it once a day. Now we publish news and information in real time on multiple platforms, even sending alerts straight to your phone. It has been both daunting and thrilling to take part in this innovation. To stay ahead of our audience's migration to digital, we are forced to evolve. Our new reality requires web developers, experts in analytics, and search engine optimization and video producers, to name a few jobs that are now staples in the newsroom. If I'm brutally honest, the print edition often took a back seat as we dealt with the digital disruption. Making matters worse, printing plant consolidations, a necessary evil as the economics of our business changed, resulted in earlier deadlines, officially ending print's reign as a viable platform for late-breaking news. But it's not dead yet. I'm excited to announce that on May the 19th, Inquirer readers will see a revamped Sunday newspaper, one that leverages the strengths of print and shows we're not afraid to be innovative in that space, too. What can you expect? The first thing you'll notice is an emphasis on bold, elegant page design that showcases our best work. While digital platforms are well-suited for this fluid nature of breaking news, print remains a compelling canvas for meatier enterprise reporting, especially on Sundays, when many of our readers have a chance to disconnect from their devices and enjoy the paper with a cup of coffee. Our Sunday edition will also feature a new look local history page, a page we're calling the, quote, inspiration, that spotlights people with uplifting stories. A roundup of news beliefs from across the tri-state leading into our regional coverage, and other anchored destination pages with stories you'll only find in the Inquirer. We're also adding a new section called, quote, Weekend Exclusive, bringing back travel features, health and science news, and some of the classic Sunday content we've lost over the years. One important aspect of our new look Sunday newspaper will be a more integrated experience with our digital platforms. Most of our in-depth reporting online includes video and other so-called rich media content. To make it easier for print readers to find that content online, we will include QR codes with those stories. One quick scan with your smartphone and you're watching the video or seeing additional photos. These enhancements have been months in the making and we'll continue to make improvements based on reader feedback. So why this investment in print? First and foremost, we know how important the Sunday print edition is to many of our readers. It was time to rethink our approach to the biggest home delivery day of the week with the same innovative zeal we use in the digital space. But this is not about extending the life of a soon-to-be relic. The traditional ink-on-paper edition of the Inquirer stands on its own merits. Ken Paulson, the editor of USA Today in the early 2000s, explained it like this. Quote, imagine if Gutenberg had invented a digital modem rather than a printing press, and that for centuries all of our information had come to us online. Further, imagine if we held a press conference announcing the innovation of an intriguing new product called the newspaper. That press conference might go something like this. We're pleased to announce a new product that will revolutionize the way you access information. Just consider the hours you've spent on the internet looking for information of interest to you. We've hired specialists who think, who live, and work in your hometown to call information sources and provide a daily report tailored to your community, your friends, and your neighbors. It's also the most portable product in the world and does not require batteries or electricity. And when the flight attendant tells you to turn off your electronic devices, you can actually turn this on, opening page after page without worrying about interfering with the plane's radar. Yes, Paulson's alternative history brings a chuckle, but his point is well taken. Print remains a powerful platform with a strong and loyal readership. Our goal is to tap into that power even more beginning next Sunday. Inquirer executive editor Burl Love writes a biweekly column that takes you behind the scenes at the Inquirer. Occasionally, he shares his thoughts on local issues, particularly as they pertain to a free press and open government. Love also serves as regional editor for the USA Today Network, Ohio. You can email him, this is all lowercase, blove@inquirer.com. He cannot respond personally to every email, but he reads them all. The fourth editorial today is, I Celebrate My Mother by Telling Your Stories. This is written by guest columnist Bonnie Jean Feldkamp. My mom died when I was 7 years old, and I've hated Mother's Day ever since. I met my stepmother when I was 8 years old. I love her, and she deserves all the tribute I can muster. But not on this one day. If you look up my mother in the newspaper archives, you'll find the photo of her car crash that killed her on February the 25th, 1983, in the Kentucky Post. I saw it at a neighbor's house I visited shortly after she died. The newspaper has been saved carelessly. The newspaper has been saved carelessly tossed on a stack of papers near an end table. I was young, but I could still read. I knew what I was seeing. A few years ago, I asked a friend to go to the library for me to get an article, to get the article that I thought ran with the photo, but there was no article, just a photo and a headline and a caption. My friend omitted the photo per my request. The image is etched in my brain. I don't need to see it again. The headline read, ICE snarls I-275 in Wilder. The caption read, quote, westbound I-275 became a sheet of ice about 8:15 this morning when snow froze on the roadway. A Toyota skidded on the ice and struck an electrical pole, and four or five other cars went out of control. Two women in the Toyota, Bonnie Feldkamp, age 32, of Walnut Street, and Susan White, age 33, of Wilson Avenue in Cincinnati, were admitted to St. Luke Hospital. That's not a typo. Bonnie Feldkamp was my mother. We have the same name. Bonnie Jean Feldkamp is my full name, our full name. I am her junior. She died in that hospital 2 days later, brain dead. My father and my grandmother signed the papers that permitted surgeons to harvest her organs, and we all let her go. I often wonder who benefited from my mother's organs. I celebrate my mom by telling the stories of people like you. I was a writer at a young age. It didn't seem like a choice, really. If I was not writing in my diary, I was writing sentences and essays assigned as punishment. As a teen, I kept a journal and wrote poetry. Diaries were for amateurs. Journals were for serious writing, or at least that's what I thought at the time. When I was arrested in middle school for destroying property, even the judge sentenced me to write an essay about the positive ways to deal with my anger, along with a letter of apology to the property owner. It would seem that everyone agreed I was better off with a pen in my hand. At 48 years old, I'm still learning to use my words. These days, I'm just copying at the keyboard. I'm just coping at the keyboard, telling stories of the everyday people in our community that matter. People like my mom, who deserve to have their stories told, deserve to have their voices lifted. I used to think that writing was my immortality, but really, it's my mother's. Her name deserves better than a mention in a caption under a smashed-up Toyota on page one. I don't need to celebrate her on Mother's Day. I celebrate her every time our name appears on a byline. This editorial is written by Bonnie Jean Feldkamp. She is the Community Engagement and Opinion Editor for the Louisville Courier-Journal. She can be reached via email at bfeldkamp, that's capital B, capital F, E-L-D-K-A-M-P, at gannett.com, or on social media at Writer Bonnie, that's a capital W and a capital B. Our final editorial today was written by guest columnist Ann Saker. Her editorial is entitled, How to Guard Against Cancer When You're Under 50. I am of an age now when the word cancer sounds like a speeding arrow zipping past my temple. Cancer generally is a disease of many years lived, so I watch in puzzlement as the illness strikes people I now consider young, that's people under 50. In late March, cancer killed an excellent local public servant, Bridget Kelly, at age 40, the Princess Catherine of Wales, 42, announced that she is getting treated for cancer. The incidence of cancer has slouched into middle age. One study published last year says that the increase from 1990 to 2017 is a breathtaking 79%. Then the pandemic bit down, and for 6 weeks in the spring of 2020, hospital systems halted all non-emergency procedures, testing, and research. Those lines of business have not bounced all the way back with predictable consequences. The head of the National Cancer Institute warned in June 2020 that the nation could see an extra 10,000 cancer deaths in the next decade. My curiosity led me to two cancer specialists at UC Health, Dr. Amanda Jackson, a gynecologist, and Dr. Sandra Starnes, a thoracic surgeon. The first step, the doctor said, is to refrain from freaking out. Cancer diagnosis in adults under 50, while increasing, are still rare, and U.S. cancer deaths have been declining thanks to fewer people smoking tobacco and better treatment. When you see these high-profile people in the community having an announcement that there's cancer, then it almost seems more real, right? Jackson said. Pay attention. A good diet and regular exercise can protect you, but don't ignore changes in your body because you think you're too young for cancer. And that is going to do it for today, Sunday, May the 12th. I'll be back next week for more from the world of editorial opinion for the radio reading services of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Again, happy Mother's Day.